Hello and welcome to Circling the Cup, San Jose Sharks podcast, episode number 124. And listen, people, I don't know if you've been playing worst case scenario bingo, but if you have been, bingo. I'm Alex, here with me as always, because we can't ditch him, is Ben. What's up, Ben?
By listening to the podcast, you've lost bingo? Where are you going with this?
Look, yeah. I'm going to point one thing out for people right now. You see, you hear how chipper Ben is at this moment in time? Remember it, because I don't think it will be sustained throughout the entire podcast. And of course, with us from Sweden on via satellite, it is our good friend Colin. What's up, Colin?
I put Bailey's in my coffee this morning, so I'd have something warm, delicious, and comforting to go with Ben's hot, cold, burning rage.
How am I both hot and cold?
Yeah, pick one.
What's wrong with you guys?
That is like
I'm still sleeping. I was gonna go somewhere better, but I need more coffee in me.
Look, I'm gonna be blunt. We will do our normal game recaps. We're probably gonna speed through them towards the end of the podcast, because quite frankly, it has not been a really good week or month, if you want to look at it that way. But guys, that could all be erased because it's playoff time.
Playoffs.
So the playoffs. I have good news. If you're looking for a beacon of hope, Sharks fans, the Sharks are in the playoffs, depending on whether or not you think that is worthy of a beacon of hope. I would argue they should have been in the playoffs. Anyway, lots to talk about, and we didn't really plan out the order, so this is going to be a little haphazard. But I think the first thing we should do, guys, is we should talk about the playoff format. Because as you guys know, the NHL opted to extend the playoff format, the current format, for just a little bit longer. Because you know this is going to be something up for debate probably by the next CBA. Now, for those of you who just started watching hockey, the playoffs have changed seedings and styles several times over the years. The last version of the playoffs was basically divisions were pretty much ignored, and it was pretty much just conference. So 1 through 8, straight up, real easy to explain to your friends. Best team played the worst team, and then it just kind of kept going down in like descending order. It was real easy to figure out the seedings. Not too long ago, the NHL decided, you know, it'd be great. Divisional rivalries, and maybe you agree, unless, of course, you have to play the Coyotes 50 times a year. What they basically did was they reseeded everything and they created a wild card. Now, I know what you're thinking. Isn't it still technically like there's 8 spots in the East and 8 spots in the West? Yeah, they basically just made it more complicated. But as you know, the first place team in each division plays the wild card, and which wild card depends on which of those first place teams had the better record and most points. And then the second and third teams in the division play each other. And then who knows? It just gets really complicated from there. Question for you guys, right? There's been a lot of pros and cons with this new playoff format. The pro being, again, the intent to foster division rivalries. And I would argue that in a lot of ways, it's done that. The cons being, well, things can be really lopsided in the first round. Especially right now, I think in the Atlantic division right now, for example, is, you know, pretty nutty considering how good those teams are. Again, the way it affects regular season is that you're playing a lot of these teams over and over again during the regular season, which again is meant to create rivalries. But if your teams suck, then it's a little less fun. What are your guys' thoughts on this playoff format? Because it might not be around for too much longer. Do you like it more than the previous format? Or do you like the previous format more?
I like the previous format more.
Why?
I think you summarized it perfectly. It is more simple. It's easier to it's easier to get into. It's easier to sort of keep your head wrapped around. And as far as I understood it, this whole smaller cut division format was to try to foster rivalries, when really the way you foster rivalries is to have schedules that let teams sort of see each other in more meaningful ways. Like, I think baseball does rivalries pretty well, even though I don't watch baseball.
But hold on a second, right? So the argument for this playoff format is that in a lot of cases, this, especially if you're in the second or third slot frequently, like, I don't know, the Sharks, you're going to start running into the same division rivalry, the potential division rival teams, right? So yeah. I think, like, for me, being a Sharks fan from the very beginning, You know, my the teams that I have viewed as our rivals have shifted obviously over time as formats have changed. So for a long time, for me, it was pretty much just Detroit,
Dallas,
and a little bit of Calgary, and then
Dallas.
So that's later, right? So then in the late 90s, early 2000s, it was basically I didn't care about the Kings, I didn't care about the Ducks. It was basically I hated the Stars, the Avs, the Blues, and the Red Wings. Now there's a situation where I have a lot of friends who have started watching the Sharks since the playoff system has changed, and for obvious reasons, they really hate LA and Anaheim because we started basically seeing them a lot more. Now, obviously, that coincided with those teams actually getting pretty good again. But the argument is, you know, a lot of those rivalries, I think, for fans are made with seeing teams consistently in the playoffs. Like if we can, like I like when the Sharks play Nashville during the regular season because I think Nashville is a great team and it's a lot of fun to watch. But if the Sharks wound up playing Nashville in every postseason, one of those teams, two teams, was going to eliminate someone, I think you would feel a very strong rivalry. In the same way that I think we're already starting to see a strong Vegas rivalry. You know what I mean? Like we're basically meeting 2 years in a row in the playoffs. So I agree. The regular season is kind of like where I'm like, I shrug about it a little bit, but the playoffs, it sets it up that way.
Well, yeah, but I think it's really just personal preference because, as you said, the rivalry happens from the results of the playoffs. And the more you are eliminated by somebody, the more you hate them.
Yeah.
So I just think the idea of trying to foster these regional rivalries is kind of silly, especially in a league where you have one conference just doesn't watch the other conference. It's, you know, it's almost a cliche at this point that East Conference teams and fans just do not watch West. It's, you know, the games are on too late. They just don't really care. It's not well marketed. So I think it's silly to mess with a format for the playoffs and say, oh, we're going to make better rivalries this way, when that's not the mechanism to make rivalries. You've just made something more complicated.
Well, I agree that they made it more complicated. But again, I mean, I think like from a fan perspective, if you're running into the same teams over and over again, right? So, for example, our division is pretty much our, you know, most of the teams are in our time zone or pretty close to our time zone.
Yep.
So, you know, like seeing them over and over again, I think fosters it more. I don't disagree with you. I actually like the other format better. One, because it was a lot easier to explain to people, especially new fans. And two, because quite frankly, even though the Sharks did end up playing the Avs and Stars and Blues quite a bit, I still like the option of the variety that I feel like is lessened a little bit with this format. But Ben, you were going to say something, and I'm actually surprised, Ben, because I was going to ask you your take and tell you that you had to have a take.
I absolutely have a take, and I don't think any of that rivalry bullshit matters at all, because you know whatever matchups happen, and it's the playoffs, so you're going to get invested one way or the other. And I think the bigger issue is that under the old format, at least it was a meritocracy.
Yep.
Right. One faced eight, two faced seven, three faced six, blah blah blah. Right. And if you were in a situation where the two best teams were in a particular division, as they often are, then yeah, okay, maybe you don't get to see them until the conference finals, but whatever, the conference finals at least are the two teams that were the best in the regular season and earned it.
Yep.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah, right. Under this current stupid motherfucking format, you could have the two best teams in the conference end up facing each other in the first round.
Right.
And one of those two best teams is just out because of the bad luck of the stupid format of dumb fuck Gary Bettman.
Yeah.
And that's just stupid, right? Like,
well, it makes coming in as a wild card a good idea.
There was no reason to change this format to create artificial rivalries, because if you're a Sharks fan and the Ducks and the Kings are good as they were until this year, you didn't like them because they were good, not because you had to fucking face them in the first round because of the artificial reconstruction of the brackets.
I've always hated Anaheim because their jerseys were ugly. But
can I ask you guys a question? Because this is something that drives me batty. I understand where the term wild card originated from in the playoff format, but why do people still use it? I mean, it's not really a wild card. It's just the seventh and eighth spot. You know what I mean? Like in the NHL, seventh and eighth spot
makes it sound more exciting.
I know, but it's like they're guaranteed playoff spots.
No, it's still called the wild card because you didn't earn it by finishing in the top three spot in your division. They are the wild card because they can come from either division. That's why. So stupid. Whatever.
It's a playoff spot. But
what's dumber about it is that, again, you know, those guys, they are facing the two worst matchups at least, but, you know, not necessarily, right? Because yes, number one is going to face the worst, the eighth seed. And that at least is preserved from the old format, right? First is going to face worse, but you know, number seven can just luck its way into advantageous matchups just by virtue of being from the better division in the conference, right?
Yeah.
And that's super dumb. It's just super dumb. So this format is dumb, and Gary Bettman is dumb, and I hope he gets herpes.
Well, I mean,
guys, that's the positive part of Ben's podcast. That's a positive.
That is positive. I mean, Bettman being in discomfort makes me happy. And let's also then acknowledge, because Ben, I agree with your points, and you also highlight that coming into the playoffs in the second seed is the worst place you could possibly be. Like, you get home ice as much as that is worth something, but you have to face the most amount of better teams.
And the problem is that it's not really the second seed, right? Because now each division has a second seed.
Exactly.
And they have to face the third seed in their division. And that can just, usually from year to year, that means that one of the two seeds is facing a much tougher matchup than the other second seed.
Yep.
Just whether, you know, the good teams are in, you know, in this case, the Pacific or the Central. Are they the Central? Right. Yes. Yeah.
Metropolitan
Eastern Atlantic. Yes. And all because of this mythical, we must create regional rivalries idea.
Yeah. Where look at, you guys rant on this way more than I do, but look at how poorly the rest of the league fandom knows about Brent Burns. Like
lot of issues around that, that partly have to do with playoffs and partly have to do with the thing you mentioned, which is that structurally it's really hard for people who live in the East to stay up and watch games in the Pacific.
I don't miss it. You would go to bed and you'd wake up and the morning newspaper would basically have like a DNF mark. It did not finish. So what are the standings? The standings were pretty much useless in newspaper back in those days.
So I don't think the the playoff seeding really has that much to do with whether people know who Brent Burns is. I mean, the main problem is again it's structural and it's just a function of physics
also a pretty big function of marketing.
Yeah, that was
the point. Not particularly great with.
Yeah, they're terrible.
Okay, you know, you can't force people to pay attention to the NHL's marketing
but that's what I'm saying. Like the NHL, I mean, come on, Ben. The NHL has ruthlessly pushed the same three or four players in the same three or four teams. And mm-hmm. I understand why they've done that, because obviously that's where the numbers are. I get it. Like, I've worked in marketing before. But at the same time, there are so many personalities that for a long time, and I'm not talking about just Burns, like Subban for a long time was just kind of under the rug.
Yeah.
And what you got were vanilla wafer personalities.
But the thing is that all of hockey is to blame for that.
Sure.
Everything about hockey culture, everything about the inherent, if you want to talk about Subban, the inherent racism of hockey fandom, there's a whole lot of stuff that's structural that builds up to prevent there being more than one or two personalities that get promoted by the league. The league thinks that the fan base is white. The league thinks that the fan base is Neanderthalic, and so they play to that by feeding you Sidney Crosby and not Brent Burns.
I think the fan base is either in Detroit. Is in
there's that too,
Boston,
right?
Is in
Toronto.
Chicago, is in Pittsburgh.
Come on,
Toronto.
Come on, it's Toronto.
Yeah.
The league is centered in Toronto. Toronto is hella white.
I love Toronto. Not because of that.
Not just because of the snow.
Wow.
I mean, it's just the way things are. I mean, they should be a lot better. And, you know, but it's also hockey culture. Hockey culture doesn't emphasize personalities.
Yeah,
everyone's supposed to just quietly skate away from the goal they just scored. And God forbid you have a post-game, you know, celebration for your win, because then, you know, the ugliest suit in hockey is going to have bad things to say about you. What I will say is things are getting better, in all of those fronts over the years, but we are trying to push through decades of a very specific view on what hockey is supposed to be and what a hockey player is supposed to be. Right. It's not just the playoff format. It's not just, it is to some extent, again, if we're going to talk specifically about Brent Burns and any player on the West Coast, there is a little bit that has to do with the reality of it's 10 p.m. on the East Coast when the game fucking starts, or 10:30. Yeah. Right. Yeah. But there's also all of this other stuff to break through. And by the way, some of that stuff that I'm talking about us needing to break through also leads to dipshit DeBoer, you know, playing a guy like Michael Haley over Jonas Donskoy to be sort of topical for this week in the playoffs. So,
well, yeah, I mean, in our running chat, I made the joke that one of the reasons DeBoer runs Haley is because Haley has a name that, you know, the rest of the fans and the rest of DeBoer's buddies can pronounce.
That might be true. I mean, if his name was Halikoff and he punched people, he probably still would be okay.
Oh, okay. Yeah, sure.
Well, guys,
question
here. And let's skip the Sharks for a second, because the rest of this podcast is, I'm sure, going to be us opening up on the Sharks. And I want to give people a 5-minute break from that, since it's been the same every week. Not our fault, by the way. Guys, with the playoffs starting, and I know a couple of things still need to be settled. General, and again, let's not include the Sharks here, but rest of the league, any predictions you guys have right now?
Oh, okay. I mean, I've got the table up because I absolutely did the homework assignment you gave us this week. So
it's a teacher's pet.
Yeah, I'm just really good at making the teacher feel like I care.
I thought you did care.
You just ruined it, though, by the way.
I know, but I'm old enough that I can be honest about it. So going down the West, I don't think there's many surprises here. Like, I mean, I think the team on top is going to win in every instance, except maybe us. But I see the Preds just sort of walking by Dallas. I see Winnipeg, I mean, getting through the Blues. I think that set is actually going to be a bit brutal, because both those teams like to play hard and they're both fast, and they've both got some pretty vicious guys who can hurt you on the scoreboard and just hurt you. Calgary and the Avalanche is the one place I think there might be, you know, quote unquote, an upset. But I think Calgary would need to show up asleep and just forget they're playing hockey for two games for the Avalanche to really run away with that one. I think the West is going to be boring. I think we know what the second round is going to be just by looking at the top seed teams. For the East, a little more wiggle there. I like Lightning. I think Toronto has a chance to put Boston down. The Capitals and the Hurricanes. For some reason, I think that set is going to be fun.
It's going to be very fun. I agree with you there.
I mean, because it's two teams who sort of know, like, have good playbooks. They've got the right players to run their playbooks.
And by the way, this is the playoff picture as of today, which is Friday.
So, like, I think Hurricanes and Capitals are two teams that they're good at different things, but they're both good enough at 5-5 to make that series really interesting. I want the Capitals to win. I like seeing Ovechkin sort of get his chance to step out of Crosby's shadow. I don't want him to win a cup if we're in the final, but I don't think I have to worry about that. And then Islanders and Penguins. I mean, who knows? If you had asked me if the Islanders were going to be above the Penguins in the standings going to the playoffs, I would have laughed.
Well, speaking of that, again, this is a fan perspective. The players, I'm sure, do not pay any attention to this, but, you know, with what Torts did, basically, or not Torts, Trotz did with the Islanders.
Just switch two letters. It's fine.
Yeah, I know. Pretty close. Amazing with the Islanders. But boy, if you're John Tavares, the Islanders finished above Toronto. What's up with that? That's all. Sorry. Go on.
Well, I'm stunned. Like, I'm stunned that the Islanders have done this well.
I think you're not alone, Colin, at all.
I think everyone would agree.
Yeah. They took a bunch of plugs, and the leftovers from Tavares leaving and turned it into gold.
Well, yeah. And like, this is a Cinderella story. So,
And it ends in this round, in my opinion, but keep going.
Well, and I hate to agree with you, but they've got the Penguins have the better playoff guns. I mean, Malkin wins series by himself. And just full on, that guy is a monster. The fact that he is not as ubiquitous a name as Crosby in the league is insane. I think Malkin's sort of hitting an age where he's less he's becoming a bit more thuggy in his play. But no, the Penguins just, they know how to get it done. And as much as I fucking hate them these days, I have to admit they're the team to win. But again, the Islanders are above them. So explain to me how their method for winning in the regular season won't transition, and maybe I'll be a little bit closer to understanding.
If you don't mind, I'll just jump in and cover everything from here. My thing is, you just can't bet against that team, the Pens, in the playoffs. I think Trotz deserves the Jack Adams Trophy. I think the New York Islanders deserve just a huge amount of recognition for overcoming losing one of the top 10 players in the league and still being basically just as good while also icing a bunch of nobodies in some sense, right? I think the New York Islanders are the anti-Sharks, right?
Yes,
if the Sharks are the team that took all of the talent in the world and turned it into a morass of horrible ugliness and shit because their coaching is the worst in the league, thanks Peter DeBoer. Like, the Islanders are the opposite. This is a guy, Trotz, who whatever you give him, he will figure out how to make it pass.
That's why, I always have liked him as a coach, and always the teams he's coaching.
I mean, that's why every single Nashville team he coached that faced the Sharks in the playoffs was the scariest fucking team the Sharks faced until the Sharks somehow beat them and then lost to the next team down the line in every playoffs. But I'm just not willing to count out Sidney Crosby, Malkin, Kessel, and their coaching staff there. The Penguins are just, they always find a way to just squeak by a team like the Islanders, and I think they will. Yep. I think the Caps will beat Carolina because Carolina just, they're like the Sharks in some sense in that they play a very possession positive game, but also are the unluckiest motherfuckers on the ice, not in teal, essentially. And I just think the Caps are good enough to get past them. In the Toronto versus the Bruins matchup, I think the Bruins have and always will have Toronto's number, and they're just going to, I think they'll pummel Toronto into submission. I think, I know what you said. You think Toronto will get by them? I don't think so. Toronto should. If you do a talent versus talent comparison, I think Toronto is a better team.
Yeah. But, and they're not relying on Marleau to score game-winning goals.
And you can't because Marleau's 95 years old. But that's not even the issue there. The issue to me with Toronto is that team never really put things together this year. And part of that is, Nylander held out for half the year and he never really integrated. Babcock's not as good a coach as he's always gotten credit for and doesn't. He's in some sense a lot like DeBoer. He plays plugs over guys who could contribute more. Sort of what we were afraid would happen with the Sharks bringing in a guy like Tavares, I just feel like they just never gelled. And by contrast, the Bruins are what they always are, right? They're a bunch of pretty good guys who play very well together. And I think that's going to trump Toronto. I think it'll be a close series. Don't get me wrong, but I think the Bruins win. Tampa is going to just wipe the floor with Torts. I'm not going to spend a lot of time. I think ultimately in the East, I think that the Caps and Tampa Bay will end up facing each other in the conference final. I don't feel confident calling that one either way because as good as Tampa Bay is, and they are the class of the league.
Yes.
It doesn't take a lot in the playoffs, a lot of bad luck for a team that is not as good to sneak by.
I will tell you what, though,
one bad bounce off a station.
If the Bruins and Tampa Bay end up facing each other at any point in time in these playoffs, that's going to be the series to watch, I think, of the playoffs.
I was wavering towards giving Bruins the advantage over Tampa Bay because I think they are better built for what the playoffs actually are.
Right.
You know what I mean? When refs swallow their whistles and the game gets a lot smaller, the arena gets smaller. I would not be shocked to see. I would not be shocked at all to see the Bruins actually get to the Stanley Cup final.
Yeah.
Really?
In fact,
no, I
besides
agree.
Besides Tampa Bay and the Caps, I give the Bruins the best shot.
Out of
that group. And yeah, in fact,
how has the Bruins goaltending been this season?
Here's
the thing with the Bruins, Colin. When the Bruins turn it on, they turn it on and they can compete with absolutely anybody.
Oh, sure.
So, and it's all team, right?
Yeah,
so it's not
all
just
team.
On the goaltender. Like the Bruins play a system where the defense will
play
help that goaltender overachieve, right? And yeah. And I think Tampa is so good. Again, I would like to just say Tampa's just going to be the Eastern Conference winner, but playoffs are wacky, and you know, hockey is a game of luck as much as it is a game of skill, and it is very likely that Tampa will get wrecked by somebody.
Yeah,
and if they get wrecked by somebody, it's going to be the Bruins, and if the Bruins wreck them, I think the Bruins go to the final.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Can I make a no shit statement? But I think it needs to be said in that case specifically. Either someone beats Tampa Bay or Tampa Bay goes all the way.
Right.
And I know that sounds. I know that's like a no duh. But really, Tampa Bay is that good, and at the same time, they, to your point, Ben, they can be beaten. But if they're playing that good, I don't think a team's going to match them.
I mean, they can play maximally. Right, they could play as well as they did throughout the regular season and still lose on the bounces. That's hockey. Yep. I think that's the thing that hockey fans don't understand a lot of times, is that how much of all of the major sports, it is the sport that is the most sort of luck dependent in some sense, right? So I don't think it's insane to say that the best team, a team that is so far ahead of the rest of the league, can end up getting bounced out in the first or second round. And I don't think that says that Tampa Bay wasn't the best team in the regular season in any way, shape or form. It just, that's hockey.
Well, I think the luck factor of a game gets mitigated by the length of the season. So
certainly that's why a team like Tampa Bay, which is as good as it is, can look so much better. I agree. Keep going.
So then it's the weird thing about the NHL is you have a regular season where an individual game is very rarely to really matter, but the overall trends that you build up really, really matter. Like, I feel your power play percentages, your penalty kill percentages, goaltending stats sort of as a scorecard for your defense. Like, those greater numbers matter. And then you get into the playoffs where a single shift matters. The importance of play just goes into the stratosphere.
Yeah.
And as you say, the refs swallow their whistle. So the metronome of play just goes away. And the most important parts of the league just is completely unchaperoned. So that, you know, you have teams like Boston who are like, you know what? If we hit them so they can't play anymore, we get to win. So let's do that.
It's not just about the hitting, right? It's not just about that idea that you grind a team down across a 7-game series. It's that, you know, when you're hitting guys, the pucks are squirting in weird directions and weird places, right? And that can just lead to a puck being on a guy's stick in the slot in just the right moment. And all of a sudden you're up 1-0. And you have a couple more of those in that game and you're up 3-0 and you've taken a game that, you know, in the regular season is just whatever, it's a 3-0 loss. But in the playoffs, that's you know, it's one crushing. Of four steps to moving forward. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And because, as you say, like those hits don't have to be legal anymore.
Nope.
Now that it's the playoffs, those hits don't have to just be dirt, you know. You know, they can be behind the play with a linesman staring at it, and it doesn't matter anymore, right? And you can hook a guy on the hands, and it'll get called half as much as it does in the regular season. And the teams that are built to maximize on the those things and the teams that are built to not lose their shit when that happens to them and to weather the bad luck are the teams that are most likely to move forward. And I think I mean, we'll get to that.
Yeah,
right. Yeah. And the Bruins are a team that are built to do that. Now, moving to the Western Conference, since we've spent so much time, you know, building off my thoughts here.
Wait, hold on. Let me throw my Eastern Conference because I'm just going to dive in because there's no point in me going like completely third.
Sure. That makes sense. Go ahead.
I mean, I was pretty much going to say is for me, this Eastern Conference is either Tampa Bay or Boston, and I really believe that. I don't disagree with you. It's going to be one of those two teams. Sorry. Yeah. Go ahead. Go on.
For all the reasons you stated, by the way.
I think the team that has the highest chance of beating Tampa Bay, luck aside, just from, you know, the way they play, is Boston.
Yeah, I agree. I totally agree with you. I will say though, I don't, you know, the Caps and the Pens are both very good teams.
They're slouches.
Either of those teams could squeak out a 7-game series against either the Bruins or Tampa. But sure. I'm with you. I lean towards the Bruins and Tampa in those matchups too.
Yeah.
Well,
this is not the Pens team of 3 years ago.
Anymore. No. But so thank you for that, because the Pens team 3 years ago, nobody was as fast as them. Like nobody could even keep up at all. You could try to get in their way, but then they're past you in scoring.
No, I agree. And Boston actually is as fast as them now. That's the other thing Yep.
Most of the East is as fast as the Pens.
Yeah, I mean everybody is. That's the thing I like about the league today. Yeah. So over to the Western Conference. I think Nashville beats Dallas, and I don't think it's close. Though I don't think I think Nashville largely underachieved this year, despite ending up being first in their division.
It's some bad slumps and injury luck.
Yeah, too true. I think the Blues are the Bruins of the West. And I think the Blues will actually come out of that bracket. I think Winnipeg is a very good team, not as good as they were last year, weirdly. And again, injuries, I can't explain some of their sort of regression, but I think the Blues are a team that is fast, big, strong, and has great goaltending and will just, you know, in a playoff series, if we're talking about the regular season, I think that Nashville and Winnipeg get the edge, you know, in playing like 100 games against those guys. But the way the playoffs are, I think the Blues are built to sort of emphasize and excel in the way that the playoffs are called. I don't think, again, I'm not talking about pure talent. I'm talking about construction, size, team, speed, systems, goaltending. The Blues come out of that bracket.
Okay.
And I think Calgary is the class of the other side of the bracket. And comes out.
I would add my thoughts. The only thing I would say is that your Blues comment, I find semi-surprising, but not fully surprising. I am more so because I agree with you on Winnipeg. I don't think that team is as put together as they've been in the very recent past. Now, folks, the moment you've been waiting for, you probably already figured it out by now based off of the week and the fact that none of us have the Sharks going all the way. The Sharks. Now, a couple of things real quick. Just a quick refresher for people who haven't followed. The Sharks just had one of the worst months I think I've ever seen in Sharks history. They lost to most of the worst teams in the league. Their lines went through the blender multiple times. Not that they weren't already. The D did not look much better than it did before. The goaltending continued to struggle. And then on top of it, Carlson's basically been out since the All-Star break.
Which he played in.
And Timo Meier went down with an injury the other night against the Oilers. Shemek is out and probably out for part of next season too. If I had to put my money on it, I bet he's a late start.
I think Shemek will be back and skating by training camp. Jumbo, he's not going to be at full strength till halfway through the season.
Yeah, sure.
That's what I will give you.
So the Sharks are not walking, and so despite the record. And despite their seeding, the Sharks not exactly looking like a good team at the moment, let alone a playoff team. Guys, we're going to go into all the reasons why we have our feelings.
But top line, it's one reason.
But top line first.
Okay? Yeah.
Okay.
How far do you think the Sharks go or can go? And those are kind of maybe two different things, and that's fair too.
I'll take can go.
Okay.
We could go to the conference final. I think whoever makes it there, especially I have to look into the Blues. I haven't been paying attention to them. If they're as good as Ben says,
they're really good. Their goaltending is really good.
Okay. So then even more for me to say that if we manage to, you know, steal our way to the conference final, whoever comes from the top of the bracket is probably going to smoke us because, let's face it, we're already banged up. We're already, like, this is classic Sharks entering the playoffs on, like, two broken legs and, like, a missing jaw. And
well, it's classic Sharks making the playoffs, as in a team is making the playoffs with significant defensive holes.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's like saying you got home okay and they find you drunkenly passed out over your threshold. It's like, yeah, technically you got there.
you crawled into and ended up in a puddle of vomit on your welcome mat. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. Did you have that one predetermined before coming into this podcast?
No.
You technically made it home, but...
yeah, exactly. No. You know, we're in the playoffs, technically. and we're not even the wild card. Like, that's Sharks fans, seed doesn't matter. Listen to what the press people are telling you. Seed does not matter, but quality of play does. And ours hasn't been that good.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think where we will go, I'm sorry. I am a Sharks fan. So I am just going to be blind to the truth and optimistic. I think we make it out of the first round.
Now, like, you know what?
I think we get past Vegas.
Hey, hold on a second. Hold on a second before we go to Ben, because I know exactly where Ben's going.
No, you don't, you fucking liar.
I'm gonna go. I'm gonna go because I wanna chime in on that as well. My position is somewhat similar to yours, Colin, but not fully similar. And that is this. I don't really know what's gonna happen the first round. I do not feel confident at all in this team right now.
Nope.
I do not feel confident at all about this first round. That being said, I do think they can eke into the second round. But to answer the second part of my question, which was, where do I think they go and where do I think they can go? I do not think in the current climate that they can go beyond the second round if they are to get there. And here's the thing that I think is really off-putting for me right now. I had a lot of people write me on the side this week, and I'm sure you guys probably saw a lot of this stuff on the Twitters, Ben, and calling you somewhere in Sweden. and that is the, you know, a couple of ideas that just do not hold much water for me. The first idea is, again, that idea that, well, the Sharks have been resting. Bullshit. The second idea is this idea of, well, the Sharks just need to make a couple of tweaks and they're great. They've had 82 games to figure this stuff out. And over 82 games, they've made the same mistakes over and over again. So I'm sorry, but for me, I don't see them being a few tweaks away. I feel like there are fundamental things about this system and this coaching that are just broken. And they're not going to sort themselves out in a matter of 4 or 5 days. Now, that's despite the talent of the team, because I think the team has a lot of talent. And this is the other narrative that I don't really buy into. And I'm almost embarrassed that it's kind of popped up. I get why it's popped up, but I'm still embarrassed. The idea, like, look, okay, the playoffs technically a separate season in a lot of ways for hockey. Yeah, to Ben's point, the games are played differently because the reffing changes for sure, and teams clamp down a lot. So this idea of, you know, the Sharks needing to score 7 goals, that's going to be real freaking tough in the playoffs.
Yep.
But the thing that gets me about the argument of, you know, if anyone can turn it on, it's these guys. I don't disagree that this team, again, has talent. I think they've been losing in spite of their talent, but and winning because of it. But again, we've had 82 games here and we have seen the same patterns. So for me to accept that pattern is going to magically change because it's tomorrow is a little too far-fetched. Ben, that leaves you. Where are you on this?
Well, wait, real quick.
Yeah.
Alex, there is one small tweak that could happen that would just sort this team out. Vegas, please play a puck into the Sharks bench right into DeBoer's head.
Well,
don't kill him.
No,
we don't saw kill the guy.
McClellan came back.
Hey, well, maybe you just need a little bit more chili on that puck.
And here's the other thing. And I'm sorry, Ben. I'm going to steal this from you before you can even say it.
You don't even fucking know what I'm going to say.
I know. I don't know what you're going to say. You're going to shock me and say the Stanley Cup Finals. For all those people that were going on and on in their justification of Haley by saying, "Well, he's probably not going to play in the playoffs." And we all said,
fucking
that's not how
idiots.
It works. Well, yeah. Right now it looks like Donskoy is
going to
be on the bench.
Idiots.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, Ben, now say what you're really going to say.
All right.
Now you got them all pissed off. Good job.
And by the way, I, for the record, I'm the one that put money in the beginning of the season on the Sharks going all the way. So I have something to lose.
Well, I mean, that's the thing, right? Like, if you look at the talent that this Sharks team has zero excuse if it was healthy and had a coaching staff that had an IQ above average, this team would be a lock. This would be the Tampa Bay of the West.
Can I ask you one question about that, though? Because this is the other question that came up to me. This is the other excuse I hear is, well, they haven't been healthy. Do you think that's what's held the Sharks back all season?
No.
Right.
You noticed that I said, if this team were healthy, and then I used a thing called a conjunction.
Oh, yeah.
To say, and
clarifying
if
for
this
everyone
team
else, then.
Had a coaching staff that had an IQ above 70 collectively.
Yeah.
There are a combination of things that have caused this team to not be Tampa Bay of the West. And it is to some extent a little bit of health, bad luck, but more so than that, when guys have been hurt, the people who have been playing in their stead are not the best case scenario. Right. So look, and if you fuckers would stop interrupting me so I could finish a point, that'd be great. Look, can the Sharks beat Vegas? Yes, because Vegas is playing almost as badly right now as the Sharks are. Will the Sharks beat Vegas? No, because DeBoer is a fucking idiot and will basically drive his car into the oncoming traffic accident while accelerating into it by playing Haley, because he's an idiot and he thinks that you can beat this team by somehow agitating a fourth liner in Ryan Reeves. And
oh God, yeah,
that Sharks
guy.
At a disadvantage
because Ryan Reeves.
Because Ryan Reeves will not rise to the bait because Ryan Reeves is a smart player and Michael Haley is not.
Yep.
So everything that you can possibly do wrong in coaching the team towards beating Vegas, DeBoer will do. Also, the team is unhealthy. Also, it is unreasonable to think that because you could get back a Pavelski and a Carlson right on the threshold of the playoffs, that will somehow elevate the Sharks over Vegas.
Wait.
Vegas is better coached.
Carlson's barely had time in our system.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's had plenty of time.
I use the word magically for a reason, guys.
No, I know.
Yeah.
I am. My point is here, and I am partly saying these things to counter the wishful thinking of our fan base. Yes, the Sharks could magically look a lot better with some better players on the ice. But the expectation that they're going to come in and be at 100% is magical thinking. It's the same magical thinking that says that Michael Haley being on the bench will stop guys from taking liberties on your players. Oh, hi, Milan Lucic, punching Timo Meier in the head. And by the way, once he did that and they both took penalties and Lucic came back out on the ice, what the fuck is the point of having a Michael Haley if he didn't go punch Lucic in the face behind the play somewhere?
Yep.
Okay, I'm going to let that go.
Just to throw a little bit more flame on that. Sorry, Colin. The thing that we talked about all season, right, which I think this is one of the things that hurt the Sharks down the stretch, the double shifting, because you're not going to play Haley the entire game. Like, here's the thing. Like, if you look at the Sharks' record post-Haley, it's not good. It's not. And I'm not putting all the blame on Haley. I'm putting the blame on the coaching decisions, because these are the decisions that have led us there. Yeah. And having players like Haley, no offense to Haley personally.
No, I give offense to Haley personally.
Well, I know you do, obviously, Ben. I've never met Haley. If I met him in a bar, I'm sure I would have a drink with him, and I'm sure all would be rosy. But the fact of the matter is, it's these decisions that have really cost the Sharks in this stretch. It's these decisions that are going to continue to cost Sharks. And I agree with you, Ben. Like, the most frustrating thing for me right now is I look at paper and I go, this has to be the year. In fact, I'm gonna throw out a prediction right now, and I don't know if you guys will agree with me, but I think if the Sharks get bounced out of the first or second round, if you're Wilson and you keep DeBoer, you are high as a kite.
Yep. Like, I think he's going to. They extended him. They don't think he's doing anything wrong.
I think he's gone. If they get bounced out early, Wilson's going to have zero choice at that point.
Yeah, no,
I disagree. I think he'll stay. Maybe, as Colin says, maybe if it's a sweep, there's a chance that DeBoer. But you think this organization thinks DeBoer isn't doing a great job?
No. Do I think they think he's doing a great job? I don't think they think he's doing an amazing job. But I will say this. Their hopes right now, and the way that Wilson set up this team, is an absolute win now. And this is one of the best opportunities that they have had. Yep. And the fact that they are going to blow it likely is going to be too much at that point. They may have extended DeBoer for a litany of other not great reasons. But I think, like, if the Sharks go out in the first round, there's no way they can justify keeping him. No way. And it would have to be a sweep.
I mean, I honestly think it has to be a sweep.
That's my optimism, man.
Yeah. Anyway, let me finish my Sharks.
Yeah, yeah.
We can build on this. So, you know, but again, as I've said before, game of hockey is a game of luck. The Sharks could magically benefit from some good luck and beat Vegas. Vegas isn't playing very well right now, and their goalie is also just coming back from injury. And so, yeah, I mean, I think the Sharks can beat Vegas. I don't think they will, because I think DeBoer is an idiot and will play into his worst qualities, and Vegas will take advantage of that because their coaching staff is not bad. But the problem is, even if the Sharks get to the second round, Calgary is a much better team, much faster team, much healthier, much better coach team, and I think Calgary has a huge advantage over the Sharks at that point.
I agree.
So that's sort of where I am. Now, again, as constructed, I think the Sharks are, you know, talent-wise on paper, probably the second best team in the league, and shouldn't be where we are, and yet it is.
Yeah, and so one of the things that I was ranting at my wife about yesterday is I have this feeling that the league is we're going to sort of see a power transition, because you look around and, you know, we've got Hurdle and Meyer. Other teams have all their other sort of superstar youth talent coming up. And we're sort of like, we've got Ovi and Crosby as the elder statesman now. So we're hitting a new transition. Like if we're exiting the Ovi Crosby era and entering, like, you know, the McDavid Austin Matthews era, like, I think this is the offseason that transitions. I think the league looks and feels different next season. And I don't think we're well positioned to get through that transition, like, just as we are now. And I think it's going to be even worse if we don't do well this playoffs, because it's just going to be like, yep, they had everything going for them. They still fucked it up. You know, why do I really want to get over there? And as we've talked about before in this podcast, it's going to be like hard decision budget time this playoff or this offseason. And nobody really gives a shit what your regular season looked like. They look at your playoff performance and go, you know, do I want to be part of this? So this is like win now, not just for a cup, but for, you know, the next 5 years of this team.
There has been a lot, if you are Doug Wilson and the fan base, and guys like Jumbo and Pavlik, there's been a lot riding on this roster this season. And quite frankly, like, if you're Doug Wilson, I mean, I don't know what else you can realistically do aside from, you know, move the coaching staff. Like, this team has been set up in so many ways to be more successful on the ice than they've been. And again, you can look at their points and go, yeah, the points. And maybe in 10 years when we forget about how the games actually looked, we might look at it that way. But the reality is just that, it's not how the team is actually performing.
Yeah.
The team is not performing at the level it can, and that's the X factor, and that's why, like, I understand where the wishful thinking comes from as far as the Sharks do have other gears. They absolutely have other gears they can shift into. I think the problem is right now for all three of us is that we have not seen enough consistently to feel confident that they have very much control over those gears. Like, it's not like the team can suddenly go, now we're all going to be good.
But the, because it, the team it, struggles. It is-
general, especially against really, and like, again, like,
this is the thing we were saying earlier, Alex.
We struggled against really bad teams.
The problems that we've seen in the last 3 weeks that have led to the Sharks looking like garbage, while some guys have been injured and after losing Shemek, are exactly the same problems that the Sharks have had all year. And what is the point of having a coaching staff except for that coaching staff to figure out how to fix these obvious problems that everybody can see?
Yep.
Right? And they haven't, and they weren't, and they didn't, and they weren't fixing them back in November when there was an actual opportunity for an actual active general manager to look around and say, maybe we should bring in a coach to try something different, right?
Well,
look, for those of you who've listened to us a while, you know, you've heard me say that Peter DeBoer is a bad coach before this year. It was true. Before this year, he's a guy who before this year failed to recognize that certain players were done and shouldn't be on the ice anywhere. Hi, Paul Martin. How you doing? Oh, I'm sorry. Is your name Justin Braun now? Because it is, right? Fails to see that guys should not be playing. Fails to see that certain other guys should be playing. Hi, poor Antti Suomela, among other folks, right? And, you know, in the same way that look, if he was Barry Trotz and could get actual performance out of a guy like Michael Haley, which maybe Barry Trotz could, so be it. But Peter DeBoer is not. He's not a good coach. And he is what has held this team back all year. And he is what is holding the look, you watch the Edmonton game. You watch literally the motherfucking worst offside challenge you have ever seen in your fucking life.
Yep.
Which for the fifth time DeBoer has done while a Sharks coach.
Only fifth? No.
I mean, that's
he's,
fair.
He's challenged way
and now
more than
explain
that.
To me how Peter DeBoer is a good coach. Go ahead. No, tell me.
Look, how many,
more,
Ben,
let me
ask you a question, Ben. How many 2 minute of the ice penalties?
Oh God!
The Sharks have taken a number of those.
To realize that something is fundamentally wrong with the players' understanding of who's supposed to be on the ice and when in their roles.
Look, well, let me play a moron for a second. I'm going to be a moron for a second. Hey guys, you think you're smarter than an NHL coach? Derp, 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 derp.
Are we
smarter than NHL coaches, guys?
This one, it seems to be. Like, okay, here's
no comment.
I'm sure DeBoer is.
Have you guys ever had a bad boss?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Had a boss?
My worst boss looked a lot like DeBoer.
Have you guys ever had a boss where you looked at him and said, that guy has no idea what he's doing? Is it impossible that a team has a bad coach and doesn't recognize that they have a bad coach?
Yes.
Yeah, oh, I just yeah because you've watched it all year, Sharks fans.
Yeah, right, yeah.
Well, so the moron counter, though, is, oh, but, you know, the players can get it done, blah, blah, blah. And to give a little dose of reality, every single time, and we've actually seen it a few times in the last 2 months, but every single time you see some player or some line just be like, we need a goal, we're going to score now, and they just go out there and get one of those hardworking, holy shit goals. Yeah, it's great to watch. It's super uplifting. Every time Hurdle has done it this season, because he's the only one.
No, Kane's done that a little bit too.
I think Kane has been opportunistic and just been godly in his opportunism. But I have not seen him step out on a shift and just be like, this is going to be something. Whereas there are times you see Hurdle step out, you're like, oh, this will be a shift. And, you know, he carries his line to the goal and then dishes the puck off to somebody and they score. Then he doesn't get credit. But anyways, those goals are wonderful in the regular season. Those goals are magical in the playoffs because they don't happen. Because, as we've said, teams clamp down. It is so, so hard to go end-to-end against a team that's as fast as you and has been watching tapes of your team every night and knows who you are and what you can do. They're not going to let you have that space. And guess what? The ref isn't going to be there to call hooking when they hook you so that the next guy can check you. Mm. I mean, you can't rely on individual effort in hockey, and you just can't even think to expect it in the playoffs. If individual effort was a thing that won Stanley Cups, the Penguins would not have lost the Stanley Cup since, you know, Crosby was drafted.
Well, but, I mean, again, like, there's a lot of stuff that goes into winning a game in the NHL, right?
Yeah.
Especially in the playoffs, there's a lot of luck. There's a lot of systems working the way they're supposed to. There's a lot of guys playing to the strengths of the system, which we haven't seen a lot of in with the Sharks this year, right? Particularly on the defensive side, right? This is, Alex, oh, yeah, this is something you've been saying over and over again over, you know, the weeks here, which is that, you know, how do you decide whether, you know, the problem is Martin Jones and Aaron Dell, and how do you, you know, tell whether it's defense, right? And the answer to that is you kind of can't, because it's both of them are problematic, right? Yeah. The goalies have not been playing well, but also the defense hasn't really done a great job of supporting the goalie, right?
I want Dell to start, by the way.
What's that?
I want Dell to start.
I mean,
he's hungrier than Jones.
I mean, I wish I could say with any confidence that either of the goalies is very good this year, but we can't. That's the problem. And it comes down to, you know, something, Alex, you've been harping on for a long time, which is basic stuff like playing a 2-on-1. The defense seems to do weird shit that any coach should be able to fix.
Yeah. Right? Well, and that's what leaves the goaltenders high and dry, because all of a sudden the percentage of the net that the goaltender is covering, because they're working with the system's assumption that the other side is covered. When it's not, they got to scramble. And your only option at that point is to play all the way back in net. And if you play all the way back in net, guess what? The shooter has all the time in the world.
Yep.
Like, these are really basic things. I totally agree. And that's, again, I think that's why, like, when I look at where my confidence level with this team is, despite like how good they ought to be, I look at it and I go, right, but they're just like, they're not. And I don't really think it's a matter of, you know, quote unquote chemistry. I don't think it's a matter of the players not gelling. I think it's a matter of, like, the players fundamentally, there's something with either the communication or just not understanding the roles and responsibilities. And you know what? A part of it, to be perfectly fair, could be the line blender. Because, you know, we seem to run set lines for about a period and a half, maybe two periods. And then the third period, it's throwing everything out. Look, like, roles, like, every player ought to have an understanding of the ice in general and their general role. But there are role-specific things, especially in a system. And if you're just going to throw a wing into a center and a center into a wing, or you're going to pick them all up,
yeah,
if players don't know what they're doing. And I would wager that's where a lot of the too many men on the ice penalties are probably coming from.
Yeah.
No, you read my freaking mind, because, you know, we discussed earlier in the season, I can't remember when, but how DeBoer seems to, like, want to play these in between lines. You know, he wants to have lines so that he's playing on the transition, so that he gets moments where, like, it's Hurdle and Thornton out there together. And it just does my head in. It's like a kid, you know, building his master plan for how he's going to break into the cookies without the parents figuring it out. And it involves, like, a blowtorch, five puppies, and, like, a vacuum cleaner set to max. It makes no fucking sense and just creates a big mess. And, you know, a big mess in hockey is too many men on the ice. And, like, he had LeBanc, Thornton, and Skorenson. And that line was great. That line was this really even tempo, you know, doing their thing. It was just a phenomenal third line. But, like, you know, there's a bump in the road, and all of a sudden, you know, hit Frappe on the fucking line blender. and all of a sudden,
that's called coaching.
Apparently you take something that works and hit it with a fucking hammer. And then you eventually reassemble it after just shaking the confidence of all the players and just shell-shocking them.
Well, again, 82 games in, and you're still having to do that. That is a fundamental problem. Guys,
I think Wilson's sin for how he's managed DeBoer is he's been giving DeBoer what DeBoer says he wants. Because I think that first season when DeBoer came in and just had to deal with what he had, he actually did some smart things. But ever since then, ever since he started to give notes up and say, hey, I would really like this, or hey, I'd really like that, and Wilson's gone and gotten it, it's just, it's gotten worse and worse. You know, oh, I can't score with the current roster. Hey, go dump all our draft picks and most of our budget and go get us another all-star.
I mean, that's the real, you know, tragedy of this year, right? And Alex, this is playing into what you said, which is that this was the year.
Yeah.
This was the year that Doug Wilson, from a personnel perspective, went all in.
Yeah.
Right. Eric Karlsson and Brent Burns in the same defensive core. Are you kidding me? Right. And trading for and re-signing Evander Kane, right. Getting Tomas Hertl on a reasonable deal, you know, in a year in between where you've got to make really tough decisions about guys like Timo Meier, Kevin LeBanc, right. Still guys you have some control over, but Pavelski being a great example, who's by the way, again, had an amazing year for a guy who's 95 years old. I mean, from a talent perspective, everything you could have possibly hoped for, except for one guy's groin, has gone in some ways really well.
Yeah. Right? Build me a better roster on paper.
Joe Thornton, coming back from his second knee injury in 2 years, had an amazing year.
Oh my God, yes.
Amazing. This team should be, again, as good on the ice, as good record-wise as Tampa Bay. It should be. But every bad decision you could possibly make almost has been made. And then the coaching systems have not caught up with the players. The players aren't doing what the team wants them to do, right? In the sense of, again, doing simple things like playing a 2-on-1 or, you know, providing that defense in depth. Again, like, you know, I made a sort of a flippant comment this week about maybe DeBoer wasn't even a very good coach in that first year, 2015, 2016, where the Sharks went to the Stanley Cup. But I sort of don't feel that way really, because I felt like in that year, the things that he did defensively, getting that team to really play defensively in layers, blocking shots, preventing, you know, dangerous shots on goal, was a big part of what made the Sharks successful. Like there was a team commitment to defense from the forward end to the defensive end that allowed that team to get past a very well-constructed team like, again, in that year, St. Louis, which looked really dangerous, and mm-hmm. Nashville, et cetera, get past the Kings finally, right? That guy who got that team to play that well defensively, where'd he go? Well, what happened?
That's what I think happened, is DeBoer earned his check that season and said, hey, if I had had these pieces, that would have gone differently. And Wilson, you know, being whatever he is, went along with it. And, you know, if the one thing the last two seasons has really cemented for me is Wilson really is crazy like a fox. Like that guy knows stuff that I would love to sit down, get him really drunk and pick his brain. And he for better or worse, he found himself, you know, locked in with this dude who, you know, probably kept promising the moon. And
I don't know.
Oh, whoops.
I don't think I ride with him. Well, yeah, but hold on. I don't think I see it that way. And I think we need to be very careful about painting that narrative, because I think a lot of the moves, my opinion is actually quite the opposite. Not necessarily that he was in, you know, he was in bed and he, you know, kind of had to lie on that bed. I think that's going to be the situation with a lot of Wilson's moves, especially with some of these longer contracts he's given. But in my eyes, Wilson has done a great job of supplying this guy with all the pieces he should have to win. And I don't think a lot of those were his call. I think maybe
that's the question.
If there was one, it might have been the need for an enforcer, or I don't know. But the rest of the calls that he's made don't strike me as things that DeBoer was necessarily asking for. And I think the reason that I feel that way is because DeBoer has not known how to use those pieces.
Right. Or has refused to use them.
Right.
A good example being Suomela, right?
But here's the thing. I think DeBoer said, hey, I want a player like X. And Wilson went and found the closest approximation to X he could get.
Well, we don't know. Yeah, that's the problem, right?
Oh, sure.
The problem is that we don't know. We definitely know that Doug Wilson went out and is the guy who drove the Karlsson signing or trade, right? That can only happen at the very top, right? And we don't know whether that was done with DeBoer's system in mind, in consultation with DeBoer. We literally have no idea, right? beyond that, on the other end, I can't explain how the guy who goes out and gets Erik Karlsson and how an organization that signs good minor league talent like minor league and international talent like Shemek, Radil, Suomela, Donskoy, Karlsson, etc., also looks at a guy like Haley and goes, "Oh yeah, that's our dude."
Well,
right? That doesn't make any sense. Let's also remember,
waves Carpenter. And then the next season picks Haley up off waivers.
And waves Carpenter, who is, you know, doing quite well on the fourth line for Vegas. Just a great comparison there, right?
Exactly the job.
Like, so what it looks like to me is a dysfunctional organization that doesn't have one voice.
Right.
And instead, you know, Wilson is listening to a bunch of different folks. And some of those folks bring him guys like Suomela, bring him guys like Kotkov and other guys that they sign sort of as free agent folks, brings him guys like Hagav Vox, who was a free agent guy, right, in the minor leagues, and says, you should sign these guys and stock up on them. You know, Alex, you mentioned something in our chat we haven't talked about at all. The Sharks signed two pretty decent-looking goalie prospects this week that you'd had your eyes on, right? And rightfully, you know, goalie prospect folks around the leagues have rightly been like, those are smart signings, right?
Yeah.
How does in that context of a team that seems to have a really good idea of what they're looking for folks who could break into the NHL and fill Sharks' depth needs, also bring in a guy like Michael Haley, who the Florida Panthers, a team that missed the playoffs, said, no, he's not our guy.
Like, yeah.
I don't understand.
That's the one that's still a real head scratch for me. Guys, listen, we got to get two or three stars. We're going to skip the games, folks. Let's just say, literally, again, everything bad that could have happened. You want to talk about early goals? You want to talk about two goals close together? You want to talk about shorthanded goals? You want to talk about too many men on the ice penalties? You want to talk about own goals? You want to talk about injured players? I mean, I can just go on.
And that own goal.
That game. Not a great game. But, guys, we do it because we have to, and we're going to do it this week despite three stars. Ben, I feel like I need you to go first on this.
Oh, well.
That's why. That's why.
I'm going to give all three of my stars to poor Timo Meier and his left wrist.
Oh, you stole me.
Because here's the thing, right? Like, when we're talking about if the Sharks could overachieve what they have in the regular season, it's really going to be on the back of talent. It's going to be, you know, the way the Sharks won some very, you know, competitive games this year and games they maybe shouldn't have won. It's because they scored eight goals in a game. And if Timo Meier's wrist is broken, and we don't know as of the recording of this podcast, he was probably one of the, you know, Sharks, you know, two best forwards this year, probably, right?
Well, also there are three forwards. Actually, really, there's two forwards we have who I'm like, yes, going to the playoffs, these are exactly the blueprint you need. And Meyer's one of them, and the other one's Hurdle.
Yeah.
Kane would be on that list if Kane could
again
keep his hands
like
down.
So many of the Sharks forwards overachieved in some sense this year, right?
Yeah. But I mean pure Karu. Physicality. Look at Meyer's shift before he broke his wrist. He takes that bullshit from Lucic.
Right.
And he keeps in the play. He doesn't go and antagonize anything. He keeps in the play and he looks for his opportunity to get revenge. And he delivers slightly too high of a hit, but brutal and clean hockey.
And probably would have been uncalled.
Yeah.
Let's be honest. Uncalled. I don't think the refs give Meyer a penalty on that hit because it's a bang bang play and nobody's really looking at it sideways until Lucic goes in and punches him in the back of the head. And by the way, guys, Timo Meyer's a guy who has a history of concussions. And nothing happened after Lucic punched him in the back of the head.
Yep.
Except Lucic ended up with a roughing penalty. The league didn't look at it. Michael Haley didn't come off the bench to do anything about it like he was supposed to, according to, you know, the meatheads who think that Haley's worth a shit.
Yeah, because jumping off the bench to get into a fight is a real good way to
that's not what I'm saying. I'm saying at some future point DeBoer sends him over the boards and he should do something, but he didn't because that's not how hockey actually works, except in masturbatory fantasies of me.
Well, that's how it used to. Hold on a second. That's how it did used to work that way. It just doesn't work that way anymore.
Yeah, you'd play for a face-off where you got control of the change. You'd put your goon out.
The point is, it doesn't happen fuckers. Anymore.
No, right.
You're right. And that's why Hurdle and Meyer are the prototypical, yes. like what you want. Because
right. they can take a toll on the yeah. other team legally. Yeah,
they can brutalize you, and they can score on you.
So if he's out... then I that makes it way, way, way. And I think he is too. I think it's, all we know at this moment is that he was seen exiting the X-ray room.
I think he plays, but I don't think he plays.
Oh, yeah. No. Like, let's all remember Forsberg won a cup on a broken ankle, broken wrist, and fucked up.
We've had plenty of Sharks playing with broken.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, everybody at this time of the year is injured in some way, right? Guys are playing with injuries beyond just sprains, strains, etc. There's guys with broken fingers, etc. That happens to Pavelski and Jumbo like every other year.
Oh yeah, it is. Thornton has a broken finger. He took a slash like 2 weeks ago, I think. That was rough.
Yeah. So, but the thing, my point here is that Timo Meier was a huge part of what made this team function when they were overachieving. And losing him or having him play at 50% because he's hurt really, really makes it that much harder for everything to come together and the Sharks to overachieve despite their coaching. And you could say impossible.
Colin, use left or right wrist? I forget.
Left.
Colin, fuck. You're three stars.
Well, Ben took my gag, so.
Sorry, man.
You can just say not. The same.
No. I've got to give it to Pavs because... I mean, that guy is our heartbeat, and he's just like he comes back from being out, and it's an immediate bonus. So, like, just bless that guy.
Yeah,
I hope he re-signs with us. It would break my heart.
He was very good, very fast coming back from injury, and that the team needed that. I agree with you.
Yeah, I just if Pavs doesn't re-sign, I might have to go have a cry somewhere.
No, I will. He's the only jersey I own.
All right. Yeah. Like, and let's face it, Marlowe's the only jersey I own, but I didn't cry when he left. I think I actually shared in that podcast.
Well, I think it's because we all also understood that he was not going to get that deal anywhere else.
So it's going to be a playoff three for me. It's going to be Pavs, Jumbo, and Couture. I think those guys need to each be leaders. Every single time one of those guys is on the ice, they need to carry the play and they need to... Yeah. Really sort of step up, and they're all capable. Like this
and
isn't any
jumbo
that
backhand
not
sauce to Sorensen in the Edmonton game was so amazing. I mean, chef's kiss. That was everything we love about Jumbo and more.
So amazing. I'm gonna give my three stars to. I think it's tough, right? Because I'm inclined to do end of the season stars, but it's not technically
we can do that in a week.
I know.
Oh fuck you.
So. I'm gonna give my third star. I should have thought about this when you guys were talking. I'm gonna give my third star to Timo Meier, mainly because not only has he had a great season up to this point, and again, I know it's not the end of the season awards, but the fact that we are all freaking out because he's injured just goes to show how important he is to the current, the present, and the future of this franchise. So my third star goes to him. My second star just goes to the fact that it's playoff time, guys. I know we've kind of been in a hole this entire thing, but I gotta be honest with you. Every playoff game, regardless of whether it's the Sharks or not, is always so much fun because of Ben, what you mentioned before, how close these things can be. It's going to be fun, even if the Sharks don't get far. And again, we hope we're wrong. And
we hope we're wrong.
Yep.
Every one of these series is going to be a lot of fun to watch. My first star is actually going to go to my buddy Dan, who got me pretty much ice level tickets to the Sharks Vegas game, which was the one good game of what I would consider the one good game of the week. So those are my three stars. Guys.
Can I ask you guys a question?
Yes.
I know you want to wrap things up, Alex.
I'm trying.
But given that we all, I think, suspect that the Sharks are not going to go very far, we would love it if they did.
Yeah.
What team will you root for the rest of the way?
Ooh.
If once the Sharks are eliminated?
Nashville.
Okay.
Anybody but Boston.
Okay. Can I tell you the tough thing about that question for me, Ben?
Feel free. Because
you're a traitor who likes Boston.
Because I know who I want to root for, but I always find myself somewhat in the same position. I found myself in the same position last year. And that is the position, and this is going to sound petty and bitter, but I'm a petty and bitter man, people. The team that I would root for, there are a bunch of teams that I would root for, and it would come, you know, series to series. But I have this thing where I just don't want to see teams that have not won a cup win a cup before the Sharks because it makes me feel bad. It does. It makes me feel bad. So here's the thing. Like everything in my gut says I would love to see Nashville or I would love to see Tampa Bay, if not the Sharks. But everything in my other gut, whatever that gut is, my heart says I don't want someone ahead to win ahead of the Sharks. So I'm very conflicted. I will say this. I think Tampa Bay plays some real freaking fun hockey.
Yep.
You guys already know that despite the fact that we have to play them, that I have been a fan of Nashville's play since Trotz was coaching over there. And I still like, you know, I've been to Nashville plenty of times. That fan base is rad. They've embraced that team. And I think, you know, that's definitely a fan base that deserves it. I wouldn't feel any disrespect if Boston won again. I know people are like, again, but here's the thing. They're good.
Yeah, I agree with you, Colin.
They're a good team. But I think those would be basically the only three teams that I would look at and go, cool.
I'm rooting for Tampa Bay. And the reason I'm rooting for Tampa Bay is because I really like the trends that a Tampa Bay win sort of brings to the NHL. And what I mean by that is, Tampa Bay is a team that has bucked convention in picking players, picking coaches, etc., and picking players in the draft, signing players. And what I mean by that is they've really emphasized, guys who aren't tall enough to play in this league.
Yeah.
Right.
Well, I love Yzerman. Like, I love that Thornton and I both look at Yzerman as our favorite hockey players of all time. He's become an amazing GM. So like
he's not there anymore.
Oh, where'd he go?
He left. He's being looked at potentially for the, I think, the Rangers opening. But I agree. But in the sense that he's the one who did construct this team, and he's the guy who led an organization that picked guys like Tyler Johnson, and put an emphasis on signing. I mean, I think Tyler Johnson they signed rather than drafted, but they've drafted some short guys. They've signed some short guys. They've given them opportunities, and that's, short guys who can shoot. And, you know, Chicago did this too with DeBrincat. Lots of teams passed on DeBrincat, and that guy is amazing, right? Like, I would like to see way more players like those in the league over some of the players we see in the league, like Michael Haley.
Well, yeah. And to Alex's point, I think Nashville has just put in, like, if there's a team who sort of put in their dues, I would say it's Nashville. Like if it's not the Sharks, I'd rather it be Nashville, and I'd love to see Subban get a cup.
I'm with you there. 100%.
Like, that dude, I wanted him to win a cup when he was on Montreal. Like, I realized sort of in
there's so many reasons to have rooted for him getting a cup when he was in Montreal.
Yeah, but I mean, that was the thing, is like I liked Montreal specifically because he was on that team.
Me too.
And I mean, I only realized that this season, so it's like,
he's a fun player.
Subban is so. I mean, Subban and Burns, right? These are guys who should be the faces of the league.
Yep.
Period.
Yep.
And they're not for various.
Well, you can't be the face of the league if you're Brent Burns because you do interviews with your hair in front of your face.
Yeah, that picture that you posted was great.
That was a great post game interview. He didn't even try to fix it over the course of like the 2 minute interview. You should watch it if you haven't seen it. It's pretty hilarious.
Yeah, it's good.
So, guys, the season is technically not done yet. The Sharks have one more game against Colorado Avalanche on Saturday. Then we will find out when we start playing Vegas and what that schedule looks like. Yeah. As of right now, which doesn't really matter because it's pretty much set for the Sharks. The Sharks are sitting in second place at 99 points. Calgary is ahead of them at 107, locking in that first spot. And of course, Vegas behind them. So we will have home ice advantage, which is a plus for sure. A lot of things, a lot of emotions, folks. And I know that, you know, you sit through these podcasts and sometimes it seems like we're just negative, but I do want to point out that it's
frustration,
legitimately frustration and love for this franchise. Yep. I think, you know, Here's the thing. I know I just said that it's really stupid to feel this way, but I'm going to say it anyway, guys. It's the playoffs now.
Anything can happen.
You know?
It is true.
It's the fireworks.
And listen, I'm going to go into game one knowing what I know and still being gleefully ignorant. I am. I can't help it.
Here's one sort of extra micro prediction. The first 5 minutes of that game one against Vegas is going to be insane. I think we're going to come out and just go full throttle, full bear, monster.
This has been built into a great rivalry. Like seriously, yes. like this is becoming my favorite rivalry. Like I don't even really give a shit about the Kings, and not because they weren't good this year, but because there's a lot of reason for the Sharks to play Vegas, and it's just going to build off of series like this.
And it doesn't stay a rivalry if the Sharks get steamrolled either. That's the problem. Right. Nope. So the Sharks need to account well for themselves. And my problem is I would put even money that we see Melker, Haley, and Goodrow as the starting lineup in that game.
Yeah. What?
Because DeBoer is going to, quote, send a message, unquote.
What?
By putting the Sharks down a man with Haley going after Reeves.
Oh, it's so obvious.
I still need to eat breakfast. Don't tell me this shit.
It's so obvious with his post-game comments about Donskoy.
Donskoy's not playing. We know that already, the dumbest insane thing ever. Consistently shitty is going to play over inconsistently very good, and it's just the dumbest thing.
Yep.
Yeah, that's a bummer. Well, guys, listen.
Thanks for that uplifting comment.
Appreciate all the people who listened in.
We very much do. Hey, we have 7 people listening right now. That's crazy. That's
awesome. Yeah, thanks all you awesome people.
One of them is a troll who can't actually contribute.
We appreciate him for listening, though. It boosts our numbers either way. Yeah. Big shout out to
I don't appreciate you for listening, troll.
Yeah, big shout out to listener Alex, who wears quite a bunch. Big shout out to Dave B, who always listens in and writes us. We appreciate it. And all the people who did. Again, most of the time we will answer your stuff. This one was just a ranty podcast, guys, so we apologize in advance, but it doesn't really feel like you disagree with us too much. You can subscribe to this podcast on iTunes. You can find us on Android platforms. Android people, by now this joke has gotten old, but I still haven't looked it up, so it's what it is. You can check us out on Facebook at facebook.com/circlingthecup, where we post the links when we go live, which, by the way, most of the time is Fridays at about 10 o'clock.
Yep.
You can check us out on Twitter at Circling the Cup. If you're wondering why sometimes you get smart analysis, that's probably Ben. If you wonder why you get Haley hate, also probably Ben.
Yes.
If you wonder why you get the Borer hate, also probably Ben.
Oh, come on.
And if you wonder why you get really weird pictures of the Sharks on someone's TV, well, that's probably me from Facebook. Hi, everybody. You can also check us out on the web at circlingthecup.com. As always, we appreciate everyone for tuning in and the rest of the Sharks community, who, by the way, I know we listen to all the other podcasts. We watch a lot of the other shows. We do pay attention to the forums and sites like Fear the Fin. And shout outs to need to go to a lot of different people, but this is an awesome community. You all are awesome. We love you. Let's collaborate, people. Last thing I want to say, guys, once again, motherfucking playoffs.
Yeah.
It's playoff time.
Go Sharks, go.
Go
Sharks, go.
You got to go Sharks, go. All right, guys, say bye-bye.
Overachieve.
Ignore your coach.
They are. They kind of already are. That's bye-bye. The problem with the defense. God damn. You're going to need to say goodbye again, Alex. I talked over you.
Bye-bye.